strength I don't know how to play. And I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Reviews Gamer Core. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and I have played the same indie game 100 times over.
yes, but you have to when you respawn, you don't get to keep your inventory. Yeah. Yes, and today I don't know. It's over now, but there was a week long. Free game on the Epic Game Store. Hell is others, which I'll.
Today's the last day, but
maybe today's the last day.
When you hear this, it's too late. Yeah, if you're hearing this,
That's right. I would personally. Well, we can. I'm sure we'll get right into it. Personally, I would say that it's worth the $15. Regardless. I thought it was a good chance to kind of just, we could do talk more. There's been some interesting stuff happening in gaming world. There's been some Last of Us. I have some very hot Last of Us takes. So I was like, there's a chance to do some roundup stuff.
News.
Mm-hmm. Cause I don't think we've ever talked about Tarkov. I actually haven't played Tarkov, but obviously I know what it is enough to just sort of, you know, it's, have you played Escape from Tarkov?
No, but I am kind of not a stalker grognard, but I'm stalker familiar, and I'm one of like very few people I think who actually read the book Stalker is based on.
That's probably true. There's very few. I can imagine even fewer who like are, you know, read the book but never played the.
Yeah, game. I have booted it up and like said this is kind of so the problem, which I've never seen the movie, which I think is actually probably the dumbest thing is so the games are based on the movie. More so than the actual book,
right? Yeah,
and the book is like it's right. It's Soviet era science fiction, but it's like pessimistic. So it's rare. It's very rare that Soviet fiction is pessimistic, but it's one of the few ones which would surprise you until you realize, oh, it's like literally state propaganda. They just snuck this one past. And it's called Roadside Picnic, but the whole thing about how like it's about these people who go into the zone and they you know, try to carry stuff out of it to make a lot of money. But the whole thing is like, oh, you like, if you carry a gun into the zone, you're an asshole and a retard. That's what noobs do. Like, you know, it's not like there's no like mutants killing you in the zone. That's like stuff that I have to add later. So it's a very different, like, I like Stalker, like the setting, but I like the, roadside.
I'm sorry, just to be clear. So in other words, you're saying it's mutants who are killing you in the zone, but there are like other humans are not the ones who are the big threat.
No, there are no mutants in the zone in the book. The mutants they were added as like. The thing actually, because people might want to read this book, it's actually worthwhile science fiction. And I don't know, new breaking news, Soviet era.
Soviet era science fiction is good. You got to be kidding me. What?
Yeah. but the setting is very. It's very bare bones. Basically, the setting is aliens come to Earth, but instead of a first contact, it's basically like an attack on like first contact books of the time, which are always like, you know, we convert the aliens to Soviet sciences, or the aliens are all communists, or, you know, or there's a battle, we fight them, you know. So it's that aliens come to Earth in like the event. And there are five like zones on Earth that just like fucking explode, and the aliens. No one knows what happened, but like these zones, like physics get out of whack, and there's weird alien tech there, and just stuff. And what the leading theory is in the book is that the aliens were literally just like traveling by, and stopped there for like a picnic, and just left their garbage out. Like people, like imagine humans are an anthill. And then people came by on the highway, left their garbage everywhere. And so these zones are like where are basically just like full of alien garbage that's like super high technology, but it's like the cast offs of it. And people are going into these zones to pull stuff out to sell in the black market. And there's a, like, the government has like perimeters around them, but because it's so dangerous, you can like slip in and slip out and sell this stuff and make a bunch of money. And you know, and all this stuff of how, oh, you know, it's stuff, it's somewhat, it's not radioactive as we can tell, but it causes people who like have this job to have deformed children. There's, it's all this stuff about, you know, it gets into like actually doing like good anti-capitalism at a certain point as well.
How so? I'm curious to read, whatever, let's lean into it. What, in what way?
Oh, well, no, it's, they just do like, this is like, you know, degenerate capital, like this, like everything becomes about like, you know, making money off these things.
Oh, I see. And it's like a literal like parasite economy. Yeah.
There are these people that are, you know, that they're called stalkers that do this bit where they sneak in and they sneak out. And they and like society is arguably dependent on these things at a certain point because they find out some of these things can be used as like basically infinite batteries for small scale electronics. So they're very valuable. But the stalkers actually get paid like, you know, very, very little relative to the actual value of these things. Once the finished product's made, they're constantly getting like thrown in jail, you know, for it's illegal to do what they're doing, but everyone kind of acknowledges it. But occasionally there'll be like a random arbitrary crackdown on all the people. Cause like they all know who's doing this. They'll live in this town that's by the thing. So it's not just saying like capitalism is bad. It's just like, it presents a scenario where capitalism is doing bad things to people, you know, who are just trying to get by.
Those are pretty short. Not just trying to get by, but the necessary lubricant, you know, for the gears of capitalism itself.
Yeah.
But like punishing them for doing that. Yeah.
And then they're trying to replace these stalkers with like robots, but they're less obviously effective because these stalkers like know the zone. The zone is full of like, you know, all kinds of crazy alien, like basically landmines and stuff. And all kinds of, you know, weird stuff. And some of that stuff makes it in the video games, like, their biggest thing stalkers do is they're always like, they have screws and rocks and they always throw, like, cause you can throw them and it'll hit like a patch of, you know, disorder, something that the aliens broke. Like it's very good. You can see the influence and how it influences stalker video games. Like some things came across, like the throwing nuts and bolts at things to like detect where the anomalies are. But, a lot of it is like the book, it's not anti-gun, but it's like, oh, the zone is so hazardous to human life, just in like random death traps or in balls of fire that just, you know, come out of the sky, or dirt that isn't dirt, or places where time just stops and you get stuck, or all kinds of places. Like the things that it's like hostile life. It's totally hostile life. It's not a place of like mutants and zombies and other player characters. Like, it's very like, it's the end, it's collaborative. The stalkers actually work together as opposed to like as oppositional factions.
So for those who maybe don't know, this is a great, I think, point to transition to Escape from Tarkov, which I think was the first big, certainly I had never heard the phrase extraction shooter before. I was aware of that was like in tandem with becoming aware of Escape from Tarkov, which I don't know. I don't know if it was published before or after Tarkov. I don't know. Tarkov was in kind of like it was a mod for a long time, wasn't it, or something like that? Like a Arma 3, or I don't know if it was Arma 3, but may as well have been. No, or was it
something like that? Yeah,
something like that. And anyway, it so like in other words to say, like what point it was quote unquote released is sort of like arbitrary, but yeah, there are a couple other games in this genre, I guess there's a direct thematic. Stalker is a great place to begin because this fictional world was created by this author that gets turned into a movie that gets adapted into a video game, sort of. In any case, there's this idea of like, and of course it extends beyond this franchise, but you know, there's certain things about like the Soviet aesthetic or
that's the other thing about the book is it's not set. It's not a Soviet book. It's like, well, it's a Soviet book. Okay. It's not set. It's not set in Russia. It's set in Canada.
Okay. The woodland, the next word out of my mouth was literally going to be woodland. Yes.
Yeah. It's
woodland environment.
it's like, I think it's supposed to be like Vancouver or like a suburb of Vancouver, yeah, where the one
totally
hits.
That makes total sense.
It actually alludes to the Soviets just locking down their area with a 100-mile exclusion zone a la Chernobyl that no one's allowed in or out, and there's no stalker economy in the glorious Soviet Union because they just don't let anybody in.
Yeah.
But then, but, you know, because the author's smart, he has like Soviet scientists actually coming to do the research in America or Canada. They go to Canada to do the research anyway because they can't get in. Like, you know, he's criticizing like a certain a closed-mindedness in the Soviets.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So that there you go. So that is
anyway.
Quite,
yeah.
Something, you know, that would raise, if I were the commissar for literary whatever in the Soviet Union, that would raise my eyebrow for sure. Anyway. Somehow this book slipped through and gets published.
Well, they also, they did, if you read their, like, there's interviews, they were doing things, they were breaking deliberate small rules that they could correct and get edited to, like, get bigger things under the radar. Like, sure. they never used, in the first draft, they submitted to the committee for blah, 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 which actually totally just refused it outright. They went to the second other committee because there's, like, it's bureaucracy and redundancy.
Sure,
like,
bureaucrat gang. You can go to the different bureaucrat gang. Yeah.
There's two committees that had this, basically did the same thing, and the stamp of approval from either one was good enough to get published, which is very funny. But they, like, so they didn't ever use the word Soviet in the book. They always used Russian, like things like that, minor stuff. Say, hey, you can't say Russian. You got to say Soviet. You know, we're doing that's the party line. So, and they used a lot of like profanity that they managed, and they would just like. They were very, you wouldn't imagine it. I guess you would actually, because it was late Soviet, it was like 70s, that they were pretty anti-profanity. The book's full of profanities. And they, so that the commissars were like, oh, well, you know, clean up this language here and there, make all these Russians into Soviet. So it's like, it's not a Russian scientist, it's a Soviet scientist. You know, basically, they got through on like all the minor, you know, copy editing type edits to get past their more like thematic stuff under the radar.
Interesting. That's maybe something to keep in mind in terms of navigating clown world. You know, tricks you can have up your sleeve to get bureaucrat gang to look in a certain, like it's like bureaucratic leisure demand, you know, like you get them to look one way while you do something else over there. And also I was looking it up. Escape from Tarkov was started development in 2012 and was, I guess, released in 2017.
Well,
it wasn't released until 2017. Yeah, yeah. It's 15, a long, long time.
I think you started hearing about, like, 15, 16. It started getting, like, out there. Oh, this is the thing you can do, you know?
Right.
I mean, Tarkov it got so popular that it started, like, a Stalker remake or reboot or sequel, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, exactly. That was there's a market for the Stalker stuff. Yes, I don't think the Stalker. And then that got put on hold by the war because it was a Ukrainian studio. But anyway, I guess that's why I had this memory of it like just being kind of out forever before it was out. It was just like it just took it wasn't out, but it just took forever. Yeah. And we should maybe, I don't know, I'd be curious to play. I've come to the conclusion, perhaps belatedly, that I really don't enjoy multiplayer first person shooters. I used to.
What if didn't like Arma shooters?
Well, that's the thing. I wonder how. I don't like realistic military simulator shooters.
I've never liked how Arma felt. Arma always felt a little.
Or even like Battlefront, you know, what Call of Duty? Even it's not. I mean, the multiplayer angle. I like single player first person shooter campaigns. I can, you know, or then like Doom and stuff. That's the other thing is multiple. I had a good time with the original Unreal Tournament. When it's kind of obviously comically over the top, then it's sort of like maybe a little, I mean, then you get, I guess, what's like Splatoon and stuff like that, which, you know, whatever. As far as the kind of, like the Arma stuff, especially, but even really Call of Duty, it just doesn't really, and Tarkov, I think, I haven't again played it, but from what I understand, it is essentially a, you know, multiplayer arena first-person shooter. There's other stuff going on, other stuff that's interesting that I always thought was kind of this idea of, you know, a kind of shared. So from what I understand, which again, this is maybe we should play it, but I think the point is what I understand. And leading into Hell as Others and maybe talking about extraction shooters as a genre, as a concept, which is where I was kind of really going with this, was there's a shared world with like resources. It's a very dangerous place to go into. And in Hell is Others, it's like actively there's no possibility of, you know, it, well, I'll get into it, but basically there's cooperation is kind of structurally gameplay wise just about impossible,
which I think is a bad way. Like I that's where
the problems would be too easy to team up. We could talk about it. Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes for a, well, whatever, we could talk about it in a second. But yeah, for Tarkov, and I think the other ones too, include there was this Hunt Showdown. I hadn't even heard of until recently. It may even be bigger than Tarkov. I don't know. Apparently, it's the one that it's like the, I guess, Fortnite of this genre or something. I don't really know. But in any case, yeah, you can sort of, if there aren't, I think there are some degree of explicit gameplay mechanisms, but even if not, you can sort of identify yourself in a way or communicate perhaps in some way with players, or in any case, make it relatively clear. Like, no, I'm at a minimum non-hostile, if not, the PMCs is right. So there's scavs and PMCs in Tarkov, right? Or is this beyond, I've read about this. I haven't played it again, but my understanding is the scavs are kind of more on their own and the PMCs can work together. Is that right? Or do you not know?
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The point is, I think Hell is Others is one of the things that I liked about it. And there's some stuff I didn't like and some stuff that I'm curious to hear your critique. But right there in the title, obviously, is of course a reference to Sartre's Pas de Sortie, No Exit, which is, this parable, I guess, this kind of, post-war French parable about hell, where essentially you're just locked in a room with you're a shitty person locked in a room forever with other shitty people. And the punchline of the play is hell is others, right? L'enfant
est
les
autres. What year did write
so
that?
Is it but, yeah, that was Sartre.
What year did write, if you remember offhand?
Oh, I don't write like the 50s,
because he might have
like that.
Stolen that from C.S. Lewis, because there's a really one of his fiction works is very has
could
a very
be,
similar
could
bit.
Be.
Or the other way around. Lewis gets old from the start too.
True. I'm trying to. What is the date of publication? 1954 film. Huis clos. I thought it was Pas de Sortie. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Huis clos. Okay, never mind. L'enfant sert les autres. Hell is other people. And
The Great Divorce, which is the C.S. Lewis book with the very similar concept, was written in 45. So I'm gonna say
okay,
still
there you go.
C.S. Lewis. I'm gonna
44. 44 is the play. Okay.
Oh, really? Never mind.
Yeah, 44 is like, Sartre. Yeah, yeah. So just about. Well, you can see. So, and that's even actually. I thought it was post-war. It's actually before the war is over. Yeah. So that's interesting.
Which also, like, so, if you the Nazis were super bad at oppressing people, why didn't they just kill Sartre?
Right, and done the world a favor.
Like, seriously, like
you drink the hemlock.
Yeah, like, you're really gonna like take over all France and not kill Sartre? Like, yeah, they're real dictatorial.
They're real bad guys there. Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, so
my newest take is the Nazis are evil because they didn't kill Sartre. I know the Nazis are bad
because they didn't do the Holocaust and they didn't kill Sartre.
Yeah, they had every opportunity. Yeah.
So Hell is Others, Italian studio. Interestingly, I think that's part. Well, so there's clearly no political agenda. There is some of this like twee indie game. I'm an indie game. Look at me. I'm an indie game. Did you know I'm an indie game? Kind of thing, like there's
I felt like I've played this game 100 times. The double entendre, because obviously you play it multiple instances.
Sorry, not rabbits, lagomorphs, furry rabbits. Furries, like furry things.
Yeah, like and is there implied they're like the black people in the universe?
You know, I don't.
They are right.
This gets into my like more substantive, because I think the core loop and the core idea are actually both very strong.
I just want to ask you if the rabbits are black people. Do you think? I think they are.
No, because they're also, well, oh shit. No, I think you're right. Fuck. Now, because so I got to the point. Did you get to the penthouse?
No.
But
okay, so like, there's like
as a new player, there's like the janitor and the attendant at the elevator.
The attendant in the elevator.
Yeah.
Yes,
and they're all rabbits.
The
setting is like this noir kind of thing, and you're like everyone involved in the noir setting. It's like Art Deco.
Yeah. Yes. That was where I was going with this. That's where to like go bring it back. Like, there's no woke shit. There's like indie twee, not gay, like homo. That's the thing. There's no homo shit. It's like it's just kind of like absorbed some of this certain visual design sensibilities. But in terms of, there's no like political anti-whiteness at all. The main character is a white man, and he's a brutal killer, and that's okay, you know, like the game is like, yeah, you're a brutal killer, like, good.
Yeah,
you know, it's quite tonally. I was not prepared. I was like, okay, let me see what kind of gay shit they're gonna do.
Because it presents you as like a noir detective type, like I'm gonna solve the mystery.
Yes.
It's actually
hard boiled. Yes,
but also he's not like a smart guy. He's like, oh, I'm just good at shooting things. You know,
he's a hired gun / package delivery man. Yeah, and so is everyone else playing the game. And
it's just the economy of the setting is that 95% of people have this as their job. Like, the implied setting is that
So that gets in. So
this is the only job.
You know, it's a little bit of a pastiche of different. So it's like pixel art, 1950s ish Art Deco, Lovecraftian subterranean horror where the streets are deserted except for these vaguely kind of they're not as, you know, the Eldritch gods are Eldritch gods. These are not Eldritch gods. They're like their spawn or their minions or whatever. But they roam the streets and they're out for your blood. Blood is central to everything that goes on. Blood is what waters plants. The game starts with you're delivered a bonsai and told to water it. It, you know, like all other plants, only accepts blood as its water. And they grow bullets. The bullets grow on plants. So if you want bullets, you have to forage in the gardens of, you know, the different parks or whatever, or you have to grow them yourself in pots in your house that are, of course, watered with blood. That you can collect the hearts from these eldritch spawn. The hearts are perishable, so they go bad after a day, unless you have a refrigerator, which takes some time and effort to get. They still have half as much blood when they rot, when they go bad the next day, as they do when they're fresh. The best heart, the heart with the most blood, that you need, blood is the blood is the oil of this economy. It comes from other players. It's if you like a small monster is like 50 blood heart, a medium to big monster is 100 blood, but the biggest monsters are other players, and their hearts are human hearts. And they say specifically it's a human heart is 200 bloods, which is what you need to water the bonsai every day. And you have to water the bonsai every day otherwise you can't go to sleep. And, you know, you need to go to sleep for like kind of what I imagine gameplay wise are pretty obvious reasons. It's interesting. It's thematically interesting. The big thing is that I think in most so-called extraction shooters, it's, you pretty much like, you can even customize your appearance. Unless you're like actively using some kind of stealth, which I saw, I guess Tarkov has had some hilarious stealth bugs where players just literally go invisible. Like, it's a bug, but it's, you know, hilarious and awful. But in any case, you just sort of look like however you are. And there's no, you know, wouldn't be any different. One of the key gameplay conceits with Hell as Others is that when you are the only human looking human, the other humans all look as monsters. And at first, especially when you first start playing the game, it's pretty much impossible. You see something that looks like any of the other monsters. It's like black and has this hideous, you know, red eye. You just start shooting at it, and it takes you to, oh wait, that's another human player. And at first, well, there's a lot that goes on. I don't want to get too bogged down in the details for a lot of reasons. But the key point is that you quickly learn, and I think this was more your experience than mine at the beginning. I ended up having to learn the lesson, and is which is that that the you just have to assume hostile intent at all times, which means if you're not able to tangle, meaning you have, you know, like some amount of serious weaponry on you, or you've got to bail like immediately, or figure out some way, or, you know, maybe get the drop if you get lucky with a you turn up an assault rifle somewhere or something like that. But yeah, there's basically no incentive, almost none. The only incentive to non openly aggressive hostile play to other players is the kind of outside risk that you might get ganked, or maybe they look, you know, the game tells you as soon as it kind of opens up a little bit for PvP, which is very, very early on. The game tells you, like, you know, if you're weak, you know, act like you're strong. If you want to hunt other players, pretend to be a low level guy with just the basic starting pistol. You know, like as a heads up thing. Yeah. I want to talk more, but what do you want to say?
I don't disagree with anything you said, but I found I feel like that I have a lot of problems, but like the biggest thing is I think that the engagements are too, I think I'm still at some pretty low level. I found engagements like very damaging. Like it's almost impossible to like just
first. That's what I'm saying. Is like you, the temptation is to try to fight. You think the game is going to matchmake, and there is, you know, some of the I saw on like discussion boards. There was apparently, you know, it was, I guess, released in October 2022, so really pretty recently. And for a while after release, it was matchmaking people who literally just started with, you know, people with endgame gear. It's not quite that extreme, but it's still between that and just like even in the absence of other players, it would be a pretty demanding, you know, like, experience. Yeah,
healing items are very few and far between.
You got to know where to look for them, but yes, they're not, you gotta, they're not, if you don't go to,
well, heal very small percentages of health.
Yes.
Like you'll find like,
yes, typically,
you know, yes. It'll be like 10% of your, it's like a 10% heal item. It's like, well, fuck, you know, it's like, this is, I'm down.
Well, you need a bunch of them, or you need to go to the hospital. And that's the other cool thing. So at first I thought the whole map was randomized, which it isn't. It's a procedurally generated each game or something. That's not true. It's a standard map. I don't know. You know, again, it's kind of one of these things where the game is very much in development. There's a prominently on the UI, there's a bug, press F7 to report a bug, you know, kind of thing. And I encountered several, from like my trigger button not working to the crosshairs being frozen in place. Like it needs some work. If you want to try to advance, and the game teases you about wanting to try to advance, the game is like, why are you doing this? And the character, your character in the game says, what do you mean? Why am I going to get loot to get better weapons? And he's like, well, to get better weapons to do what? To get better loot. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, it's sort of actively, you know, asking this question of like, why are you playing this game? Actually, I don't know that I have a great answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's because video games are inherently fun, right? Even the worst video game. What's the boomer saying? Like the worst day fishing is better than the best day at work.
yeah, very, very boomer. Yes. I went from thinking that I was going to be matched against other level one players to very quickly realizing that wasn't going to be the case. To trying to play from trying to play like I'm just here doing my thing. I don't want to, you know. To realizing that wasn't going to work, like other players were, you have to at least fire off a couple, not even warning shots, shoot at them, but you know, probably, you know, low likelihood of connecting shots, just to kind of, and then that wards some people off, some people it doesn't, some people are determined to pursue you. Usually, pretty much always, unless they're really, really, really invested, you can run away, but then running away may put you right in the middle of the worst thing about the game by far is there are these hidden traps in some narrow alleyways that that give no indication of their being there. You simply just have to memorize the locations, and they're all over the place. It's it's terrible. There should at least be some kind of something, some kind of visual indicator. I really hate that. I have to, and I saw a bunch of complaints about it. I'm like, yeah, this sucks. I don't know what the designers were thinking. Other than, I mean, you know, literally, I guess this is the only game you're going to be playing, which is not the case. No, there's things I've gotten to a point. I'm kind of like, I got to, so what I was saying before about the penthouse and the rabbits, the first rabbit you meet is the hallway janitor, and the second is the elevator operator. And then the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and like eighth or something that you meet are all maids in the penthouse. There's one, this is why I was like, oh, they're not, I don't know, because there was an administrator. And it's true. There was kind of an administrator, but he's not the whatever the.
Well, I say they're black people, I'm kind of joking. The proper term is they're mechanicals, which is a Shakespeare term for like a menial character.
Yes. Okay.
They're not actually, I don't think they're actually supposed to be black people. I think, but like all the mechanicals have been reduced to a.
Well, they say I don't trust rabbits. Short ears. Like that's the thing. There was none. I actually think you may be more. It may be like racial stuff filtered through non-English native language.
But also, I don't want to offend. I think also could be this is right. A game. We were going to offend.
I think
nobody
it's almost more
this.
taking the libtard thing about like oh race isn't real. It's just a social construct. It's just skin deep. At a certain kind of literal face value to where like the rabbits are also just another race of humans. It's a way to like, it's a way to be like, oh, these are a racial other that comes with no kind of, presuppositions or there's no context for it. But when you talk, so when you go to the penthouse, you have to like get a certain, you have to get to level 7 to get to the penthouse, which is already pretty, like that's where I got. And that's pretty, it was pretty tough to do. So you get to the penthouse and you've only met two rabbit characters at all. And then all of a sudden there's all these other rabbits and they're all maids except for one who's the DMV lady. And she's at first I thought like, oh, this is, I guess, the person in charge. Cause this whole thing of like the actual person in charge left. It turns out they're the one who gave you the bonsai. But it's still, it's a murder mystery. It's a very kind of hard boiled, you know, a detective story kind of thing going on. The DMV, it turns out she's just the rabbit DMV lady, which is, it's interesting to see this, the position that's afforded to the rabbit, who is this kind of totally, you know, ideologically vacant racial other, is still, it's a delegated authority. It's not that a rabbit is actually in charge. It's like, they're the kind of the surrogate. They're the top, they're the head, they're the HNIC. They're the HNIC. So the HRIC, I guess. So they take you to the back room and say, oh, we got to talk to the notary. And the notary, because this is the one who's like actually going to come up with a decision and resolve this kind of crisis that we're in. And the notary, quote unquote, is this giant, you know, it's like a giant mainframe computer the size of a warehouse on the penthouse of this kind of infinitely tall skyscraper or whatever above the streets. The skyscraper is safe. The condo is safe. It's the streets below where the Lovecraftian horrors lurk. And so you go and there's this giant AI, like 1950s, you know, vacuum tube, monstrosity style computer that does all the kind of difficult decision-making. And it says, okay, you need to get $3 million so you can buy the bonsai and resolve this situation. Of which I have like one million currently just from like essentially getting to where I am now. Now I'm like, okay, I don't know if I want to grind another $2 million, but I'm having fun. So we'll see. But, I found it was thinking when you said that about this, but the rabbits being black people, initially I resisted it. I was like, yeah, but they're menials, but they're also, oh, that was the other thing. Cause they say like, there's one or two comments in the NPC dialogue about, we don't trust short ears. Right. Like, so these racial differences that are like, quote unquote, skin deep that don't mean anything are just a matter of like, you know, are your ears long or short? Right. But the thing is, it wasn't, I think, because it was coming from people, it's just an Italian studio. These are people are not Americans, so they're not steeped in it in the same way or to the same degree. It didn't come across to me as. What they're trying to convey is, well, if anything, it's the rabbits, which is the lower menial caste, are the ones expressing the racial prejudice against humans. So it's, you know, already that would be like, you know, a scene where it'd be like a scene in an HBO show where a black character is like, I don't like white people or something, you know, like and really making a deal of like, oh, this black character is being quote unquote racist against whites. It's not something you see very much.
Yeah. The other thing that I have an issue with is so the game is like obviously very tense. It's very like survival horror-y, obviously. But they cheat because the soundtrack has, so there's a mechanic where they're like, you can detect you can hear footsteps. You get a direction indicator. If there's a player or an enemy, like environmental enemy in a direction moving, you get like a hearing indicator that is going to be by like audio footsteps. But sometimes like just to build tension, I guess there will be like part of the ambient noise, which would be like footsteps that are not from a player or anything.
I'm not sure that that's true. It could be, but I noticed at first, I didn't know what you were talking about. Then I noticed what you were talking about and I did some Wikipedia gang. And from what I understand, it's actually, those were footsteps. It's just the person who, whose footsteps they were had some kind of, like, it's a buff you can get in the game that it's you're bullshit. Less detectable.
Because I had players. That happen in the tutorial with no players.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was one of the creatures. I don't know. Yeah,
I think
it could have been just a bug. It could have just been a bug that you.
Like, I didn't think they're see. Just cheating to build tension because
could be.
Which is, like could that's an invalid move, but I found it annoying. And like if we're doing like this,
I definitely have noticed footsteps without. Like a sound indicator coming from a specific direction. So like, I don't know what that's about for sure.
Yeah. They're cheating. They're adding tension artificially.
Could be. Yeah. That disappointing, if true, I assume it's like a bug or a mechanic or something, but
I'm sure there is a mechanic, but like it won't stop them from typing in a couple footsteps. So you get more
tension. There's someone there. Yeah. It's really, and death is really, I mean, all these games, you know, but you really have very, the thing that gets me that I really like, the one change that I think would make it a much, much more forgiving for new players experience is being able to equip you have a briefcase in your pocket. And this is your inventory, and it's very small, as you can imagine. The briefcase, everything in it goes away when you die, which is reasonable. The pocket you can keep is one item, only one slot, only ever going to be one slot. Briefcase you can do quests to essentially farm blood to increase. Only ever one slot, so you can pick one item that you'll keep after you die, but. If it's it can be a weapon, but if it's a weapon, you can't equip it. I think that's bullshit. You should be able to have one weapon, like, you know, clutched in your hands, you know, between deaths. If it's a weapon, if you want it, you know, the thing is, I often, when I'm doing a bank run, because there's a bank, you know, in the city that you can deposit money and withdraw from ATMs near a shop you want to go, so you don't have to carry your money around on you. On a bank run, that I go with basically no kit and my money's in my pocket. So if something goes, you know, if something goes wrong, at least the money's going to stay with me. If you're doing that with a weapon, then you have to choose. Like, do you want to keep the weapon or do you want to keep the money? Right. So it's not like it, you know, I don't think it would, you know, I think it's too much of a helping hand to allow that. But in any case, that's not, as it currently stands, you cannot equip items that are in your keep upon death slot. Which is bullshit, for sure.
Yeah, so I had issues with the money because I have kind of with the ATMs and the shops. I don't know if I haven't like progressed to unlock certain shops, but like I have arrived in shops that just don't have shopkeepers or anything.
Yeah, you got to unlock each individual shop has a fetch quest.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
But the thing is, I find myself like, first of all, I do. It's definitely true as a you know. As a dad and just someone who doesn't have as much time nearly to play games as I once did, matches are no more than 12 minutes. You go down to the city. If you stay more than 12 minutes, the city's horrors get you. You can't physically survive there that long. So you have to, that's where the extraction comes out. Right. And, And so it's easy to not play for long in a certain way. It also, I've noticed that, like, because the first day I had it, I was really excited by the premise. I have a super hot, just like insane take that I'm whatever, it doesn't matter. I'll say it in a second, but you know, I was enjoying the vibe. I was enjoying the kind of way it was making me think about, you know, video games and cooperation and selfhood and subjectivity and all kinds of stuff. And then I think I kind of burned out a little bit, and I noticed, you know, I played it. It benefits from not actually being binged, at least past that kind of first. Once you get past that too difficult punishing spike at the very beginning. My hot take is that it made me think about international relations, that the idea of cooperation is impossible. There's the realist school of thought in international relations is basically that pure ego is absolutely ineradicable and fundamental, and that you can never ever basically you can never entrust intentions. You can only ever evaluate capabilities. And I don't think that's true, like, metaphysically. I think it's possible. Obviously, most cooperative, you know, okay, games are games, but you could do this game with the possibility of more meaningful cooperation, or at least some kind of,
well, this game intentionally makes it hard to cooperate.
Impossible. Yeah, it makes you literally would have to be on a voice chat in order. If you want to do cooperation, you have to be on a voice. You have to form a party with your friend and be on a voice chat and be constantly communicating, go, here's where I am, and be able to keep track of, because even if you're in a party with someone, they appear just like any other enemy, just like any other monster, just like any other, they call it others, other players, other like player, you know, human player characters are called others in the game. So yeah, it's like a theory of otherness is part of what's going on. And actually, I would say for a video game, but also just kind of in general, a fairly sophisticated way. It's a kind of meditation on what is the nature of our interaction with other human beings. Please, yeah.
I want to talk about that. There's alternate. So obviously, alternate theories, things like the original DayZ. I actually think they may have changed this, but in the original DayZ, you would, which was kind of probably the origin of this, but it was just persistent. It was like a persistent universe, where you would go on an island and, you know, loot and build things and craft stuff and
fight
zombies. So you could fight other player characters in the original edition. They actually took it out, but if you ever killed another player character, your skin changed to a bandit or whatever. So that, I think that would probably be an interesting way to do it. We're like, okay, this person is not, has never killed a human. Like, obviously somebody who has killed human players could be a good cooperator, but someone who has never killed another human player is obviously more likely to be a cooperator than someone who would shoot you, right? But also you could, like, point your gun at somebody and say, hey, drop all your stuff or I'll shoot you, you know, and maintain your...
Right, yeah, you could, yeah. You could do the armed robbery bit without the murder one. It just struck me as sort of and I don't think even necessarily that the developers are endorsing the correctness of the theory. It just struck me as an encapsulation, gamification of a certain kind of model of human relations, and therefore, you know, like the organization of human societies, of the interaction between human societies at a higher level. And a very bleak and pessimistic one. But tied to this kind of scrabble for resources, compelling. I really enjoyed the I don't know, 10 hours or so. Let me check my Epic thing, but yeah, it's I don't know. I definitely as you said at the start, it will no longer be free as of the time you're listening to this. But if it sounds interesting to you, it's basically like a top down, it's like a top down, almost, I compared it in terms of the pixel art aesthetic and the kind of like the physical mechanics of twin stick shooting. And there are melee weapons. There are, range weapons. It's kind of like Hotline Miami, but Hotline Miami was like a cocaine binge. I actually didn't really like it very much. Did you?
This is why I don't like this game that much, is because I love Hotline Miami.
Okay. All right. There you go.
And the reason I think is because
I wish Hotline Miami was this game. I was literally, while I was playing Hotline Miami, I was like, I wish these missions had some connection to each other. I wish it was a little bit slower. I wish I could take some time to think about how I was going to approach the situation.
You can. You can just, at any point in Hotline Miami, you can just stop walking, and the enemies will stop walking too, unless they're like, see you, you know. But, but anyway, Hotline Miami is top down, you know, shooter melee, but like, you know, no health bar when you die in one hit or two hits if you have the armor. So, it's like super tight controls, like as good controls as like an NES game.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes it really good. And also there's some lock on stuff too. Like it's made to be like control very well. Because this game is like an online only thing, I know you haven't had the same problems I've had, but
the controls are a lot mushier.
Even when they're going good, things are really mushy.
Yes, they are not. The game gives you time and space to compensate. It's clear, like, you know, if you go in with like a Hotline Miami type thing, it's just not going to go very well. Generally, you want to put time and distance. You want to run away while reloading, even if you have fancy weaponry. It's a different kind of thing for sure. And it's not nearly as tight. But the net code, I think, is the bigger issue. I hadn't experienced connectivity problems really.
I'd
only played, I think, like 4 or 5 hours at that point. But then like the next day I started having, some ping issues, and it's definitely, it just makes the whole thing wonky. Like you really need if the connection isn't stable, it's too easy to die for reasons that really shouldn't. Like it's, you know, you're a couple, steps to the left or the right, or you know aim is like half a tick in the wrong direction,
or you can't escape out of a window. That's what made me stop playing this game, was like trying to run out of a window to escape, and there's a mechanic where you can jump through windows, and they're very clearly marked. You hit spacebar, you jump through the window. It's
that
a
was
set
probably
animation.
A bug. Would it not let you jump?
Yeah, no, I think it was just lag, like because the animation takes so long to complete. It would be like, it would kept like, I would hit the jump button, my character would go halfway up the window. And then like net code would like catch up to actually I'm, but you know,
oh no,
I'm behind the window. I would jump the window and go back in.
Multiple times.
That
sucks. Yeah, no, that sucks. That's not okay. For sure. Yeah. So as I said, definitely a lot of bugs, some net code needs work, and it's, it's unfortunate. I think part of it was that, again, I didn't have those issues, and I still haven't had much of it. I saw firsthand what you were talking about. I was like, yeah, this is basically unplayable. But while I was playing it, while it was playable, which was not like that, it was really fun for me.
Yeah. Very John Madden tier commentary. The game is, when the game works, it functions right. And when it's broken, it's hard to play.
Well, no, the reason I say that is because
it's true.
Okay, so the first person shooters that I have played, like most recently I enjoyed Titanfall and the sequel were pretty good. Your connection isn't always 100% stable, but typically it isn't. I don't know. I never really noticed. I would sometimes notice lag, but it wasn't like it was really impacting me all that. I never felt, this feels like it's literally life and death, and it's constant, and it's really consequential because the margin for error, as I said, the game gives you some time to compensate, but you still need, I mean, you use like half a second, not like, you know, 2 seconds of lag.
Yeah, and also like the there's like it's like a stealth game, and sometimes when you're walking, you'll take your foot off the like say you're walking right or whatever, you take your foot off the button, and you'll keep walking like 5 more steps.
Yeah,
it's, which is yeah, in a stealth game, just like
yeah,
that's right. Not you can't be doing this, you know.
Can't happen for sure. So hopefully they get that sorted out. I saw that there was some the game first came on my radar because I saw some commentary. It was basically like this is fun, has an interesting vibe, but player count's kind of low. You know, it obviously absolutely depends upon a healthy player count to be an interesting experience. So we'll see how that goes. And then I guess they,
I feel like you could actually easily bot, if you were low on players, you could pretty easily bot players.
That's true.
In
that's something they should consider. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if they already do it.
Could be for sure. Could be.
Interesting. I noticed one player that I dealt with behaving
like a bot, like an AI.
Like he wasn't. I saw him. I saw him get the elevator. He actually ended up beating me, which because it was I had lag issues. I was pissed. I was also low on health. But like I called for an elevator and I ducked away from the elevator, and he jumped in it. But he like ran straight into it very deliberately, and then turned around and didn't like because I could see him. He couldn't see me because of how certain mechanics work. Or maybe he could see me. Either way, he wasn't fidgety at all. Like a player is kind of looking with his gun left and right and moving his feet.
I keep still when I'm doing like yeah. So the way
if that you were and it's, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
There's a difference between how players move and
sure.
Maybe he no, was just of course a, played a lot, you know. But
or maybe he was just like not, or maybe he was not good. You know, like that's the I. There, one of my favorite interactions in the game was what was it? I've had a couple of fun interactions with other players. A couple of kind of like mutual, like back off. One time there was a guy, there was an elevator and it was getting like, there was only 2 minutes left or something. And there's I believe it's up to 15 players and up to 10 elevators. So there's not enough elevators for every player. Some of them will die to the wildlife. Some of them will, you know, kill each other. So they're, you know, it just depends. But in principle, there's not enough. Some people are going to get left behind. I didn't want it to be me. So I, you know, shot him in the back and took his ride. Then when I called an elevator and I got in the, there's like a little, some of the elevator spots there's the locations are set, but there's, they randomize which ones come down. And when they come down. And so some of the spots are more defensible than others. This particular spot was basically one entrance, one exit, just a, you know, a single door, completely blind corner coming in. So I just sat up, I set up shop in the corner, pointing my gun, not moving at the entrance, waiting for the elevator to come. Once you call it, it takes like a minute or so for it to come down. And I was like, surely no one's going to be dumb enough to like actually try this. Why am I even really bothering paying attention to, you know, I could just kind of fidget with my inventory or whatever. But then sure enough, with like 15 seconds, 10 seconds on the clock, somebody came in and he tried to steal my elevator. So I pumped him full of lead and I got him down to like one or two hits of health. And he like ran in. So the thing opens up with a click, right? And it must have been, I don't even know, like a no more than a couple of milliseconds. This is where I'm grateful for the, you know, good net code. Or maybe he suffered from bad net. Maybe this was you.
He's a different guy.
The guy just like sat there for like half a split second. So he like got in the elevator. I turned in the elevator and I shot him right there in the elevator, took his shit and got out and took the elevator that I called, which was my elevator, just to be clear. But yeah, and there is a kind of, I think I wouldn't say unspoken rule so much as like, it's obvious if someone calls an elevator, everybody knows, okay, this elevator, there's someone who has called it. So it's his elevator. So you can go fight him for it. But unless you like unless you're really desperate for a fight with someone who knows that someone, you know, might be like, oh, it's all going to be on heightened alert. So, you know, and the game will give you indicators, as you noticed, of there's like a heartbeat and like a visual effect on the screen. It'll tell you when other players are nearby. So you'll have some warning, and it's generally like you know, it's not that you're safe, but I've had more kills from just getting swarmed with too many monsters as I'm waiting for a ride than I've had. I think I've won once or twice at most if I've been killed by other players by an elevator. Doesn't happen very much.
Yeah, I've had a lot. I guess because I also have a lower level, people don't know that. Like, I've had a lot, almost every time I call an elevator, it's a fight. Like,
it's just part of. I guess
the really
other
yeah we have like different. I had very few fights over elevators. Yeah.
Yeah, I have never called an elevator. It didn't result in at least, you know, some gunfire.
Wow.
I think also because I'm just lower level, people want to check. Oh, like you get a map indicator. There's no objectives in the game. Like, there's no waypoint system, right? Unless it's like
that, I would say there's no little dot indicator. It's like you got to read the map. The quest will tell you, hey, I'm at this avenue, you know, in this intersection or this, you know, read this building, find me, you know, this like area of the town. Sometimes it's frustrating. I've had to look up some locations, but I'd rather do that than have just these gay indicators all over my UI.
Yes, but the elevator does give you basically an indicator. So I think people who new players will just sprint to the new, you know,
well,
so
yeah, the thing on your map. Yes, that's true. Yeah, the elevator is the one exception that when you look at the map, not in the game. Well, like in the when you're in your safe, you have a little apartment and you like put furniture that does stuff in and whatnot. When you look at the map of the city. In the safety of your own house, it shows you on the map where all the possible spawn locations for the elevator, well, all those locations are. When you go down in the city, those are gone. So you just have to know. And the map is the map. So it's just, it's a little small maybe, but then again, you know, you want to run into other players all the time, which you definitely will. But it's cool because there's like a hospital, there's a police station, that's where the weapons are, but it's a secure area. So there's only one entrance and exit, which means, you know, it's very dangerous for everyone involved. There's, you know, parks and gardens, a big fancy bridge, shopping center, it's a couple mansions, museum, and you know, they all have kind of area appropriate loot. That's like, if you want electronics components, you go to the office complex. If you want monster parts, you go to the monster museum kind of thing. If you want weapons, you go to the police station, etc. If you want blood, you go to the hospital. The indicators for the when the elevator is ready to be called, it'll light up on the map. That was where I have fights. Not when the when it's green, it says it's ready to be called. When it's orange, it's like someone has called it. When it's green, yes, I get into fights all the time. When it's orange is when someone has claimed this. So they're going to be there for the next like 60 seconds. If you're really desperate to try to kill someone and get their heart and get their blood, you can go do that. Good luck.
Yeah. I will say that there is some, not that I've been down on it. The having the very small inventory system does make the rewards for killing somebody pretty. You get like, there is the one item, but like, you don't get like all of their loot because you can't physically carry all of their loot usually. So there's actually not that much reason to go around like killing players. It's, you have to like kind of want to, and it can actually, you know, make it harder on you. So there are some, like, there is some stuff going on. It's not that it's, you know, all my commentary is bad. I also kind of want to try to play with a controller because I've been playing.
I was going to say, I've been playing with a controller throughout and I can't, imagine the only time I use mouse and keyboard is when it's like fixing up your apartment is just about impossible. The controller, it's not, I don't know what they're thinking, but as far as actually controlling the game, it's pretty clear. People complaining about, you know, different key, because it's actually quite a complex action role-playing system. There's you walk, you crouch, you stand, you walk, you run, you adjust your aim. You load different types of bullets. You load different types of weapons. You mess around with your inventory. It is a lot of stuff going on. And in a game like Skyrim or whatever, it's not necessarily a problem. But in this game, it is. It's very much, you can't. It's hard to. If you're gonna use WASD on your key, you know, mouse and WASD for movement and shooting, then like, what are your other, how are you going to press buttons to interact with, for, you know, to okay, E for basic interaction, but then what about messing with your inventory? What about all these other, you know, complicated things? And dashing is its own button. It's a lot. And yeah, I would definitely recommend a controller.
Yeah, I was kind of worried of the precision stuff, and I'm sure it'll be fine. Either way, I don't think it's too meaningfully different. Do you want to switch gears and talk about the Last of Us stuff?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, I do. Right? That's why you have a video game show, so you could.
Right. Talk about video games, yeah, or gay Jewish adaptations of thereof. I wanted this to be prepped for Mike, and I don't know, I guess it seems like, I guess we're going to be doing, we may be filling it, not filling, but you know, we could give you some Friday content while,
content desert,
not really called the content desert is going on, but, in any case, so we're free to break it here, but to put together this delicious, narrative.
Breaking news, you're Jews, fuck people, goyim on contracts.
Okay. Yeah, so we News have alert. This. Alert. So The Last of Us obviously is this, you know, big Uncharted style zombie game. I thought it was okay. The first one, I never played the second.
I enjoyed Last of Us 1. I found it, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. It was it was pretty good. It was there was not really any gay shit except for, as I recall, in the DLC, and that was like teenage lesbians, which is like okay, but also like not like that's not apparently the to skip all the way to ahead and we'll go
well okay guess, backtrack so backtracking yeah. So there was gay Easter eggs for these, so these characters are in the main game, the fags in the show, but it's like either Easter eggs gay, like you got to find the audio log.
I honestly never even, I guess I would, if you, maybe, yeah, if you obsessively, okay, so that's the level that the gay shit was at in the first game, was if, you know, easily missable audio
also,
log.
Also, they were comically gay, like, it was like, there's an audio log you can find, or like a note you can find, and then there is a one-off joke about, you can also, like, find an item, which is a bodybuilding magazine, and if you look at it, the girl will say, like, gross, their pages are sticky. Like, this guy was jerking off. But like it's not this like homosexual romance. It's like played for like laughs. Like he's fucking. I mean, it's owning the survivalists because there's the survivalist aggressive aggro guy is actually a fag. Ha ha ha. But it's not like apparently because I'm not watching the show, but the powers that be are saying, oh wow, what a great homosexual love story. It's really emotional and deep and. Which I'm not watching it. I don't care. I'm not, you know, I will not watch the HBO show. You cannot
watch the HBO show. director told I forget who I had it queued up, but it was that the whole point was to trick that was the word that the director of the show used. I want to trick people into watching fag shit. He didn't use the word fag shit, but that's what he meant.
Yeah, but I think what the contract stuff is that sorry, we gotta skip over the contract thing is that the two writers of this thing are Druckmann and who's the literal Israeli and then some goyim guy. And apparently Druckmann is like the executive producer of the show or the producer. And the goyim is getting no money from the show.
Yes. He did not get a penny. Isn't getting a credit or a nickel. It was his direct.
Instead of getting a credit for the.
He doesn't even get a credit. That's right.
Based on the
even
game. Though-
But, which wow, he great. Yeah and the they were co-listed they were they essentially shared top credit for the first one, and then Druckmann took over for the second one, which is why you know you go into a synagogue and you can shoot everything else in the game but you can't shoot the Torah and blah blah blah. And then of course like it's just a bunch of gay tranny shit and it's just nihilistic and sucks and everybody hated it. But
the game was like very much like this is the end of the like this is the end of the show. Like this is like the first.
It's very clear, like a one-off. Like it didn't need a sequel. There was really no room really for one. It was completely pointless. And apparently not only that, but then when they did the because the game originally was on PS4. They did a PS3. It was PS3
the last,
originally.
This
was
the last PS3 game.
It strained the PS3 to the absolute limit, which is why it was immediately given a remastered edition for the PS4 that the game that it actually kind of should have been, essentially.
It was pretty good on 3. I think it was using all those, 8-stack cores or quad, whatever, like whatever double quad cores. Yeah. I it was like a masterpiece of program, like that they got this game and GTA 5 out on those consoles is extremely impressive. But also the crazy thing is like, what's the guy, the Gentile's name in this thing? Like
Straley.
He's getting Straley. No credit for the show, and the show, which is like the thing he was like, he didn't do the show is about the first game. At least right now. Maybe it'll go on to the gay shit later. But like they're doing his stuff right now. And Druckmann's like a producer. He's like the early Uncharted. He's not like a like the elements of the story are clearly more of Staley than they are Druckmann. Druckmann just like he's more of like the video game producer angle of it than the
you can see his writer. Influence in the second. I mean, that's the thing. You can see that like the kind of story he wanted to tell is completely different from the kind of story that Straley wanted to tell. It's just very evident, you know. Yeah.
And I think Straley, I don't know if it's him, but like I probably was him because he's not a sequelizing Jew in the way that Druckmann is. The game explicitly at the end is like. Basically, they don't hit you over the head with it, but like they look to the camera and say there will not be a sequel. You know, like effectively, like the last mission is
right.
Like,
yeah,
no,
right.
The main character is dead, and the girl is not doing any more missions. So, like, she's going to live with these other people and just live a normal life and not.
Yeah, she's like
third person action games.
right. Yeah, like it's over. The crisis is averted, and you know, yeah. And this world has no. In fact, it's a very optimistic note. The world, you know, has a chance now, or something. Or no, it doesn't.
It doesn't. But like, yeah. But we're not trying to save the world anymore. I'm retiring forever from the game of football. You know, it's like,
yes.
And now there's like, I don't know. It's weird. Also, you see how like the I don't want to say lib, but like, what do you call it? Like. Gamergate guys who didn't go any further, like the liberal guys who will occasionally say, "Oh, this media has all these unnecessary black characters." Like, apparently, the word went out to all those guys that, like, this is the show you have to pretend is that, oh, these people are doing the gay
doing
shit
right.
It's like, oh, what are universally your conservative guys have to, or you know, not conservative, you know what I mean? Like, your gatekeeper guys have to say how great this is. Like this is your diversity done right. And it looks, I saw against my will on Twitter, like one screenshot of two, you know, redneck presenting men kissing. And I was like, well, yep. That's what I assumed it would be, you know, and it's apparently one of those Nick Offerman from the fucking Parks and Rec show, who is like a shitlib in real life and was pretending to be a libertarian,
he made a big deal on occasion. Like, I'm not a right winger. I'm a libertarian.
Yeah, but he's just a shitlib actually in real life. And right, yeah, like he's leveraging his like libertarian cred.
I think he's worse than that. Forgive me. He's a Canadian, right?
Is he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just... yeah. Sorry. Go on. I didn't mean to derail.
No, I mean no. That's true. I got mad at Canadians yesterday when I saw the Jordan Peterson shit. Jordan Peterson said, "Oh, we need to invade Iran."
Illinois.
Okay, if I'm getting mad at Canadians for getting mad at Canadians, because I've been mad at Canadians for like 2 days now over Jordan Peterson, who is both doesn't have any sons. He's a Canadian and has no sons. You don't get to say that that anyone has to go to war with Iran. You don't have any sons. You're an old man. And you're Canadian. It's like, you don't get to say that, oh, American guys need to go die to fucking give Iranian women the right to vote. I don't, dude. What a piece of shit. It's so gay. Oh yeah, the U.S. should go to war with Iran.
My question is really
West
honestly
needs to, you know, to rediscover its masculinity by going on a feminist
Iranian
war with
women.
Iran. Yeah, let's do.
Yeah. Defend Iranian women. Yeah, it's I don't. Does anyone actually? Does he have an audience? It's not clear.
Apparently, he's got a 6 trillion Twitter followers or something like that, right? He's got a.
Yeah, but how many of those are bots?
I mean, he was huge. I don't know how people are still following
him. Yeah, he was for a minute. Is he still? I just don't see it. I don't see who the hell talks about, like, you know, Jordan Peterson. I once saw on, I believe it was either the subway or New York. Let's just say it was the subway in New York. It was like a mid-30s black dude reading 12 Rules for Life. That was maybe 10 years ago. No, it hasn't been out that long. I don't remember how long ago, but it was not that long. It was a while ago, I guess. The point is, it struck me. I was like, okay, so here we have Blurred doing a very specific bit of, like, I'm publicly signaling that I'm a certain kind of, I don't know, aspiring intellectual, or I'm trying to understand. I don't know. Who knows what's going on in his mind, but it was just very, I think he was the only person I ever saw out in public with a physical copy of that book, reading it in public. So
do you think white people will just walk up to him and hand him money?
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe I got. Very
like,
much so. Absolutely.
Are Republicans just going up and seeing that and just handing him $100?
So, I mean, that's probably why he did it. It was just like really advanced, like
advanced
panhandling.
You
know? this nigga got his master's in panhandling. He's on the subway, but he's not like going around in a with a crack pipe. He's showing Jordan Peterson books, trying to get donations from Republicans. Yeah, I don't know. But that, like, I have not seen anything. I've not heard anything. He seems to exist primarily on YouTube and Twitter and in the imaginations of libtards, but I don't even really, it's not even that I see them talking about him.
As someone who has an Instagram that I never use, but occasionally like look at it out of, you know, when I'm bored, things like in this Andrew Tate before he was arrested was being pushed on Instagram despite all this stuff. And so was Peterson. Like they are the algorithm at Instagram really pushes Jordan Peterson stuff. And it's like clips of him set to inspiring music or owning some libtard or, you know, like,
okay, so
the algorithm,
okay,
so being pushed by the algorithm.
Okay, interesting.
But the and the algorithm can't, like, will make, if it puts yourself in front of people, people will follow it. Like,
yeah,
he's absolutely getting
the voice lob.
The TikTok actually got exposed for doing this, or got whistleblowered, but everyone does this where they had like a button on their back end where they could make a post go viral. Like if they want a post to go viral.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Just
push it to everyone. Just like, okay, if you have an Instagram here, yeah, you're going to see this.
And yeah, I'm sure like his stuff, you know, he's like the ultra gatekeeper, and like everyone knows that he's a gatekeeper at this point. Like he's just been exposed, you know, so thoroughly.
Well, that's my question is I don't, okay. You can get Instagram to push your dumbass videos to however many Instagram users there are. Is that the same thing as having a cultural impact? Maybe. I'm just not convinced.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously the Jews, like, you know, bought him off. Like he signed that Steven Crowder contract, you know. So
Peterson signed the contract with Daily Wire, but that's the whole
thing.
Yeah, I mean, one of the side angles to the Steven Crowder thing, and just generally, is they're not really. If they were strictly interested in making money, right? There's no need for the terms of that contract. I don't know how much of their money is, you know, generated by this or that. I mean, I have no idea. For all I know, they could make all. Well, what do they even sell? Advertisements on their website? Do they have subscribers?
They do merch.
I know merch? They do. Like that's what I'm saying. It's just like that's all. Just that's not like they're not paying. They're not selling $50 million. Worth of merch.
They were buying Crowder's the rights to make posts in his name.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's what they want. They
exactly. Yeah. And because Crowder does have an audience, Crowder does make money, or at least he has. We'll see how long if he having said pretty much explicitly that Shapiro did this because he's Jewish. Interesting. Let's see if he get let's see what happens to Crowder. I'm curious. But,
well, I think Crowder is actually better at business than like every other Republican, because that's how you get Jews to like play ball. Is you say fuck you, like seriously? Yeah, if you give a bloody nose, they will actually like negotiate with you in good faith. Because they know you have the ability to
like
play firing those.
A couple shots and the hell is out. You know, just like, I don't want to kill you, but get the fuck away from me.
Yeah. Like you have to, as Winston Churchill said, great, American and Anglo hero, the Jew is he's at your feet or at your throat, you know? And the Jew is at your feet or at your throat. And
Churchill, yes.
Yeah. You know, I find him very,
Greg's the great and noted anti-Semite, Winston Churchill, accurately put it. Yes. Yeah.
And it's true. Like if you try to go in good faith, like that's kind of, I think, where Kanye fucked up is he tries to play too nice. Like Kanye would do better going harder. I legitimately think, and he, not that he doesn't go like hard occasionally, but if he would just say like, no, they're like the evil, instead of like doing his weird, like, I love them bit. Like Crowder is actually doing the bit much more in a much more anti-Semitic way.
I mean, there's a version of the I love them bit that I do, but it's like, I love them, which is why they want them to stop being Jewish. You know what I mean? Like perhaps a slightly different thing.
Yeah. But yeah. So I want The Last of Us show to stop being Jewish.
Yeah, exactly. Can you just stop being Jewish? Can you stop? That's pretty much, yeah. I don't want, after the show, I'll tell you. I mean, I think you remember what I'm talking about, but like, you know, pretty much like you could put, you know, as the Buddha said, stop being Jewish. You know, like that's.
Oh, if you see a Jew on the road, stop talking about, don't say anything else on the podcast.
Right. That's all for today, folks.
Yeah. Ooh, that's I'm sorry. I shouldn't have figured that out. I should have just been in suspense, but yeah.
Okay. I think was there more on Peterson and Crowder or?
No. I do. What else is there? Oh, I do want to talk about I found a new source that I like for the Ukraine war stuff, because I like to keep people abreast on what's a good source. Like DPA is Defense Politics Asia is a great, I think
the single best
objective person in this whole thing.
I was really, really impressed by the synthesis that he made of, because he didn't say anything while there was stuff going on in the South in Ugodar and, you know, lots of competing claims, and he kind of stayed out of it and then came up with a map that is clearly like not biased, which is a very impressive achievement. And that's been his story all along. This was just really, really, it was one of these cases where it was, you know, fog of war was really thick and there was lots of competing. And he actually made a big public thing on today, as of this recording day, February 2nd, of he's not following Intel Slava anymore as a secondary source, as he put it.
Yes.
Which is good. I haven't followed Intel Slava for months. I was surprised that he still did.
Well, they do good stuff into English that you can't get anywhere else, you know? But I think he has this beef with this pro-Russian guy who is just lying. Yeah. And he's like, anybody who's relying on this guy is just bad. Like, you can't, he's just not telling the truth. But so obviously there's the pro-Russian sources and stuff that I have, and like Rybar. But
I think Rubar or whatever is pretty. I think he's like maybe a very, very slight Russian bias, but. It is.
I think they revealed it. It's a team of like nine. It's a big 9 or 12. It's like a big,
including some former operators. Yeah, it's a big.
It's a big team.
It's a big deal. Yeah,
but
they do good work. I generally take. There's been very few times that I've seen Rybar be like wrong. They're usually somewhere between ahead of events and perhaps a little overly optimistic, but they're almost never. Have to make some kind of revision, you know, in my experience, at least from what I've seen. Same is not true of elsewhere. You see a lot of like, you know, this claim is, you know, the city is taken, and they keep saying they've been taken. What they mean is that they've entered it, right? and they can enter it many times before it's finally cleared. It could take weeks or months. But what was the source you mentioned?
Okay, so I want to his YouTube channel called Willie OAM, which is an Australian OAM is an Australian metal. He's an former Australian army guy who I believe fought in Afghanistan and has become like an independent war reporter type. And the reason I think I like him is also he's not retarded, like he doesn't lie. He's also like not he's pro Ukraine, but he's not in the same way that I am pro Russia. He is not like his first thing is like, hey, ideally the war ends today as it is with the ceasefire and the fighting stops. Like that's the best move for everybody. And then, but failing that, I'd like to see Ukraine win. Whereas that's my view is like, I like to see the war end today, you know, ceasefire on the line of contact, stop the war. But failing that, I'd like to see Russia win. So we have very similar, you know, desires. Just actually literally the same outlook. It's just like, you know, politics influence, you know, failing peace. I would like Russia to win. And this guy's failing peace for Ukraine to win, which makes sense.
I think it would depend on what my
World's a long war posters. Like I think this could go on for a year or two, and he's the same way. Like this could go on like for.
I certainly agree with that. What I was going to say was to me it would depend on what a peace deal looked like because of anything that the status quo was unacceptable and is which is to say it's a non-starter. So as long as the status quo is the like a return to the pre-war status quo. Is the position of the West and the Ukrainian separatist regime? Then, like, you know, that's
just I think the thing is peace. Ideally, you just do peace on line of contact, like ceasefire in place.
But then there would have to be like regime change in Kiev. You know, like it wouldn't. You couldn't just
You could just do a ceasefire. You know, like these things aren't. But anyway, we're getting beside the point. He's a very good source. I found him when he had that interview with another Australian who was an ex-Foreign Legion as well and Afghanistan with the Aussies who was fighting against Wagner and gave like a very realistic assessment of their capabilities and their casualties and that kind of stuff. And he's got a bunch of interviews with people who are like, it's very rational. It's not over the top stuff.
I have to check it out for sure.
He has this 3-hour interview with this kid who's like who I don't know. So he gets in this weird thing of like, so he's good. I know this Australian guy's telling the truth, but he's a good interviewer that he doesn't let these people talk about stuff. You know, he's not really directed too much. So he's talking to this kid, and I don't know how much this kid is bullshitting or not. Because he says he just went to Ukraine when the war started because he saw some kids dying in the news and whatever to go fight and ended up with the first unit that would take him, which was the Azov Battalion. So he kind of like joined the Azov Battalion not knowing really what the situation was politically and fought with them for I think 4 or 5 months. But it's a really good interview. Even if you like say, oh, this guy's seriously, it was interesting because he was clearly lying about how Nazi the other foreigners were, like other foreign volunteers in Azov. He never mentions them being Nazis once, which is what you would do because you want to be able to come back home and like not go to jail. He maintains he's not a Nazi, but he would say like all these, Ukrainian officers in Azov were all like,
Sig Heiling. I mean, like they're ideological anti-Semitic.
They love Hitler. Like they love Hitler. Yeah, and they have swastika tattoos. Like, I mean,
is that, yeah, I mean, okay, but that's, I don't know, whatever. I mean, it's not, I just, the based aesthetic thing always got, like, who cares?
But it is true. Like there is reason for Ukrainian nationalists to be
that absolutely there's for like, yeah, but if you were smart enough to understand that, then you would be smart enough to understand like your government is run by Jews and whatever else they're doing, the Russians are trying to.
Well, what's funny is he actually says his battalion or company commander during this, because he was not in Azov proper. He was in the Azov Kiev detachment because obviously Mariupol is Azov proper and they were getting, they were cut off very early. He says that his company or his battalion commander was literally a Azov activist who had been thrown in jail in the intervening period in the wars and was released from jail to command a special forces battalion. Like, he was thrown in jail for being an Azov activist by the Jew government.
I see.
And was freed from jail to go.
Okay, so why not take your men and switch sides? As lots of people did, especially in 2014. Like, it's not. There's still people.
Well, I don't think the Russians are really. I don't think you can defect to the Russians.
Oh no, that's true. Azov, you're right. Because Azov was banned in. Yeah. Well, that just shows. Okay, so then you're just a grug. You're just a grug, which is fine. I mean, we need grugs, but I'm just sorry that you're in this situation where you're too grug to like comprehend the depths of grugness that bind you. You know, like.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
But yeah, so that's kind of what that is, and you know, it's very interesting. He has a lot of good interviews with people. He does occasionally he'll do his map. He does map videos occasionally, but they're a lot shorter than you know, DPA or other source. It's a lot less autistic, but it's a lot more matter of fact too.
Good. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, Willie OAM, and he also did an interview that the Wagner guy and that the guy fighting against Wagner, who was very clear that like. No, Wagner has better equipment than the Russians do. I mean, than the Ukrainian army does. Like, Wagner's gear is fully modern and all this stuff.
I saw multiple part of why, and you're adding to the chorus, of course, is part of it too. But I mean, we're just really dispositive. But the I had already sort of said, oh, I guess I should actually watch the video because I saw different snippets, each with very interesting headlines of the talk. One of which was the description of Wagner as quote near peer. Which, in other words, meaning like which is what the United States military means when they talk about like Russia and China, they call them near peer. I would argue with the near, like they're just peers, but you know that there's that American exceptionalism or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, so there's that element. He also talks about he basically said that the only way to win this would be like actually sending in advisors. He makes very clear like he's very down on like the quality of Ukrainian officers. Even like to this now, like the narrative was like, I've seen narratives like, oh, they were bad and they've like fixed it up. He maintains that they're still pretty bad. And the way to solve this would be to send in NATO advisors to like be like battalion commanders and like higher.
In what sense is that not just the, I mean,
that's what we're advisors, bro. Yeah, it's advisors.
I mean, that's the kind of thing where I was, like, there's, you know, I have always said my, if you can call it optimism, the reasons, the structural reasons undergirding my perspective on Russia's prospects in this war are there's like no accounting for actual NATO involvement and there's no accounting for nuclear weapon deployment. I don't necessarily think either of those things would, or both of them even would change the outcome necessarily at all. I mean, I, you know, who knows, but that's a kind of, these are kind of like asymptotic type things where you just can't, it's like, okay, well the math no longer works, but barring, so just to say like what he's would be, he like, I my point is I agree with him on that in the sense that, yeah, like that's one of the two things that could like actually turn this around I would just call that formal NATO involvement because it would be.
Yeah. He also mentioned like a certain level of arrogance among Ukraine officers, like that they were refusing NATO advice often. Like he mentioned like even turning off their radios at one point because they were sick of getting like having him tell like the guys that he's, you know, a NATO officer or
whoa lad.
Yeah, like getting sick of being told like you can't, please do not, you know, dismount and advance your company into that town on the main road. Like, please, please don't do it. And they're like, oh, I'm not a fucking in the best, you know, please stop telling me I shouldn't advance down this road, you know, and of course, turn the radio off.
What?
He mentioned, well, I'm putting that together because he told a bunch of stories. One, he mentioned Ukraine also turned off the radios once, and he mentioned a lot of unsupported company attacks against prepared Russian positions.
Yeah, well, that would explain the foot. I mean, I mentioned before, like, how do I... What gives me an indication, like what is my epistemic, you know, like tool that I use? One of them is you used to see a lot of Russian bodies, not like you'd see maybe even roughly equal Russian bodies, Ukraine bodies in the gory, you know, war porn. I see more Ukrainian bodies than I ever saw during the worst parts of that early invasion phase. And I see hardly any Russian, but it just doesn't. The Ukrainian, they don't have footage. And I'm sorry, but Pixar didn't have, this is a social media war as much as it is anything else. And if Pixar, it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, there's some truth to that. Also, you do have problems with the, speaking of the thing I want to talk about was that there is like the Ukrainians, I think, have a 2 or 3 month delay rule on footage, and the Russians have a comparable thing. So
now
that footage doesn't get out immediately, but a bunch of really good, like probably the best quality footage I've ever seen came out recently from a bunch of, they're calling themselves that they're all Jaegers, but they're probably not all like actual, like a Jaeger is a specific thing in the Finnish military and the Swedish militaries. But they're probably using the word as slang. Oh, a bunch of Finns and a couple Swedes in the Foreign Legion have their own kind of subunit, or like it's mixed Americans and like Finns. And these Finns are were carrying, it was all 2 months ago, carrying, you know, GoPros. And there's a lot of like really close up fighting from the Kharkiv push. And it's a, you know, very high end quality, very quality, high quality. But it's also not like super victorious. Like, there's one where it's they're basically besieging some Russians who have holed up in a town. Their BMP got hit. Russians hole up in this building, and they're, you know, basically, you know, throwing grenades out the windows. They're trying to storm it. They storm the front. They frag all the back rooms of this house, and they think they've got all the Russians. And the video cuts out and says, "Okay, at this point, the video ends because we took artillery fire." And we took 2 KIA, and everyone in the video you see is wounded now, you know, like pretty serious, like stuff where like, they're just not just like winning, you know, there's another video where it's basically like they're shooting at a BMP, BMP wounds one of their guys and pulls back. And next, the rest of that video is them like trying to get this guy, medevaced or castevaced.
Yeah.
Like,
I saw parts of that. Send me a link. We'll put it on the link in the show notes. Make sure to send me the link, and I'll include that to some of those, if you can, for those, some of those videos you just mentioned. Because I haven't seen all of that, and if it's like high quality, that was one of the earliest problems. Is everything was just so grainy and awful.
Absolutely.
And yeah. But yeah, we are starting to see. It's the first It's the first social media war. The first GoPro war.
High end GoPros too. You know, none of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that GoPro, I mean, it's still, I think that was really a kind of a, I think people are just starting to emerge from having processed that GoPro footage of the, you know, with the two Ukrainians who didn't surrender that made just such a way. I think in some ways that'll be a kind of turning point. And that was, I don't recall the pro-Ukrainian side, like especially on Twitter, really seeing much footage like that circulated up until that point. Could be wrong, because I didn't, you know, spend a whole lot of time there, but the closest thing I guess was, well, but they had, it was the Bayraktar, like the Bayraktar went viral within, like, you know, anyone kind of vaguely following the social media war on social media, that one TB2 strike on the undefended convoy, you know, made hay for months on that. This was a kind of, I think that's the only other one that's had a similar impact, but it's not a Turkish drone blowing up a Russian convoy. It's that whole fucking clusterfuck.
Yeah. So I'm going to send you the video, and now the title of the one of them is like utter horseshit. It's the guys fighting the BMP, this BMP, they kill this BMP with a Mavic, they drop a grenade into it, disable the BMP, but I think four of the crew escape, and they say they're trying to storm this room that they've, the guys have holed up into it. The title of the video is that they defeated a Russian Spetsnaz team. This is not a Russian Spetsnaz.
Oh,
team.
It's their own dudes. I saw the story. I didn't see the video. Did you see? Well, the Rush. Okay, this could actually just be total cope. But
the Russians have been talking about it. I've seen a lot of takes on it that there was like a like the reason this fights are because the Russians were going to surrender and the Americans shot one of them. But that's not in the footage at all. You know,
Russian Telegram says this is blue on blue.
I don't
know if that's true or not.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just know they're probably. I've seen some photos that are, that like say this is possibly a DPR.
I'll have to check out the video. I haven't seen the video.
Not like Spetsnaz.
I like watching some footage. I like watching engagement footage, I guess. And I didn't realize these were. I mischaracterized these, I guess. So I'll definitely, because I saw the people started talking about it as, yeah, the Spetsnaz, but it seems regardless, they weren't, they were just regular infantry.
Guys in a BMP. It was like just, you know.
Yeah. I see. I'll check it out. Cool. Thanks for the links. Yeah. And I'll definitely include those in the show notes. Yeah. So I think that about rounds it out. I don't know. Did you have anything else?
Is it more video game? Oh, there was a Warno update as our chief Warno correspondent.
Yes, and Company Heroes about to come out. Company Heroes 3.
Yeah,
I'm curious if I can. How many more? Anyway, yeah. Sorry, go on. Warno, yeah. What's the Warno has a big release? We get update.
Had a big update. They added. They've added. You know, more level layers of complexity to like certain things. Dedicated infantry, like there's like a buff, like it's for instance like BMP infantry, if they're proximate to their BMP get certain bonuses like to morale and things like that. Special forces get, you know, bonuses to bring such forces. There's a reason for to have like military police units now. They remove debuffs for certain units, like reservists. Reservists now take debuffs for being reservists, things like that. I think the game is obviously, you know, it's not out yet still, but I'm a big Warno enjoyer. It's real fun. You know, if you like Wargame Red Dragon or those kind of games where you're controlling every single unit on a screen and it's a lot of units, you'll like Warno. It's definitely it's
too fast for me. I'm an old man and it's just too fast for me. I can't even Company Heroes a little too, but it's at least, well, the first one especially, but the second somewhat less so, but still it's, you, yeah, you're controlling squads, not units. You have time to think about, obviously you have to think about stuff. It's not about, it just mean that the time, it's just the time.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. APMs are not. I've never been an APM guy.
Yeah. So that's all we. I think that's all we got. I don't have any more video game specific news.
Yeah, but of course, if there are any, well, I'm curious. I could correspond Company Heroes 3. I don't know if I'll. I don't know. I saw apparently the single player. They're doing an Axis single player campaign, which nobody's done for a while.
Ooh,
but
fun.
This one, right? But I was doing, yeah, anyway, but the apparently there's like oppressed Jews in Northern Africa or something. It's like a Jewish family that has to deal with the Nazi occupation that is sad or something. I don't even fucking know. I'm like, what the fuck? So yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. I don't know if I'll do I don't know if I'm actually going to play single player campaign. I'm curious about the multiplayer, and I guess I'll see the cutscenes and we can discuss Company Heroes 3 Axis campaign once it launches.
So is it like starring these Jews or like what is the?
I have no idea. One of those little preview snippet. No, I think there it's like the story of the campaign is told through their eyes or something.
Oh
something
my like god, that's
yeah, I know, right? Like perfect material for hate consumption. I kind of just want to avoid it, but I'm also like, I think I file it under, you know, intelligence gathering. Like what does an Axis single player campaign look like in the current year? What is that like? So anyway, we can one up that for sure. All right. Take care, everybody.